I'm Sabina Dietrich. I'm director of the Urban and Regional Analysis Program at UXER, and welcome again to one of our brown bag seminars. We're really happy today to have Mark Head from the City of Philadelphia talking about open data. A couple of announcements, more on open data. Bob Braddock, who set this up, we want to thank Bob for all his work on this, is organizing a Code for America Brigade, December 4th, 6 p.m. at UXER. Afterwards, you can talk to Bob about that if you're interested. There's Bob, most of you know Bob. Steel City Code Fest, the second annual one. The kickoff is February 21st, a Friday, and the Code Fest is the 22nd to 23rd. Sign-ups start after Thanksgiving, for those of you showing up again or for the first-timers. We have one more brown bag seminar at UXER at our regular office, 3343 Forbes Avenue. Dr. Colleen Kane, who's senior policy analyst at the Northeast Midwest Institute in Washington, will be talking about her work on community benefits agreements and the Hill District, negotiating with the growth machine, community benefit agreements, and value conscious growth, CBAs in the Hill District. That's Friday, December 6th, and Bob has all the flyers there for you. We're pleased today to have Mark Head. Mark Head is a writer, speaker, and thought leader on communication technologies and open government. Self-taught in programming, Mark's been developing communications applications for almost 10 years. He served for 3 years as chief policy and budget advisor for the state of Delaware's Department of Technology and Information. He also served as director of the Delaware Government Information Center as technology advisor to former Delaware Governor Thomas Harper and in the New York State Senate as budget and finance analyst. Mark's built open data software applications for a number of local governments, for the New York State Senate, and for a number of foundations. He's an organizer, judge, sponsor, participant in civic hacking events across the country. Mark holds a master's degree in public administration from the Maxwell School at Syracuse and is a former adjunct instructor at the University of Delaware in teaching a course in electronic government. I want to thank a couple people, some folks that are here. We've got our partners in our data systems with Allegheny County, and I want to thank Allegheny County for all their work. A little later on in the spring, we'll be releasing a Southwest Pennsylvania Indicators project that we're doing with the Allegheny County Department of Human Services, and we're really happy about that partnership. We've got our GIS friends over there, and I like to remind people that City Council member Bill Peduto was an early sponsor of ours and of the Pittsburgh Neighborhood and Community Information System way back when. So we're very happy that our incoming administration has been a thought leader in data, data systems, and open data, and will become an action leader in our region in open data. I know a lot of you are in communities where you're looking for a little bit more play from your administration, so I hope Mark's talk today will help you with that. Mark, for those of you from other communities, I think you'll enjoy that. One more thing, in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Magazine, I think, wrote a story and said that one thing about bringing in a city data officer is Mayor Michael Nutter gave political cover to open data enthusiasts in the administration. He brought Mark in just over a year ago as the chief data officer for the city of Philadelphia. Mark's comment in that same article was, I don't have to finish to succeed. I just need to convince people, enough people in City Hall, that sharing is worth trying. Thanks, Mark, for coming to Pittsburgh. We welcome you to the University of Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon. Is this working? Can folks hear me with this?
Hello, hello.
Yeah? It helps? All right. I'll be gesturing wildly, so I'll try not to knock this off here. Thank you for letting me join you today to talk about generally about open government and open data and what's happening in municipal governments, and then specifically in Philadelphia, what we're trying to do. It's not my first slide. I don't know. I guess it will be my first. Well, you know what? Let's stay here. I had a really good programmer joke as a first slide, but I'll save that for the next time I'm in Pittsburgh. Just to follow on just what was said, I started out in government. I didn't start out in government technology, but after working in two different states in the legislative and executive branches, I found myself being pulled inexorably toward technology. This was a time, this was the late 90s, early 2000s, when the internet was really changing the way that governments deliver service and the way we interact with citizens and provide information. And I found myself pulled into that world, and I wanted to go down the rabbit hole. I wanted to become a professional technologist, and at that time, I didn't have a place in government where I felt like I could do that. So I left government for about 10 years and worked as a software developer, mainly in the telecommunications industry. But then around 2008, I started to get pulled back toward government. 2008 was the time when the District of Columbia started this civic hacking contest. They called it Apps for America. That was Apps for Democracy. I'm sorry, there was a couple of early ones. And I was really interested in this and found myself entering this competition and actually won a prize. And I was hooked immediately. This was a way that I, as a professional technologist, could contribute to government and help improve the mission of government. And through hanging around the right places, I came into the orbit, the gravitational pull of an organization called Code for America. And I worked at Code for America for a time, and then happened to be on a conference call with the CIO and the deputy one of the deputy mayors in Philadelphia, and was being very bossy about what I thought they should do with open data and what I thought they should be doing to foster innovation. And they said, "Those are all great ideas. Why don't you come and do them? Why don't you put your money where your mouth is?" And so that's what I did. So before I go off on my grand tale, let's talk for a minute about how we got here. How did we come to be here this afternoon talking about open data? The idea of governments collecting and curating and maintaining data that is then shared to the public is not new. I remember being an over-caffeinated grad student using the statistical abstract from the United States Census to support the points I was trying to make to my professors. And the Census Bureau has been doing this for a long time, right? The Census Bureau has petabytes of data, and they've always shared this data. But it's really only in the last few years that the Census Bureau has embraced this new approach to data and started to deliver data to end users in unprocessed format. So a lot of people think we're in the third stage of open data. The first stage they usually characterize as the adoption of all sorts of FOIA and Rights No Acts that would make data available to the public. So this idea that the data is needs to be available for public scrutiny sort of came into being with the adoption of FOIA laws and Right to Know Acts and things like that. The second iteration, I guess you'd call it, of open data is generally thought of as when governments, either through regulation or through acts of their own, would make data available, but in these very consumable ways. So, for example, the federal regulation that requires auto manufacturers to put a rollover rating on an SUV, that was open data, but it was in a very consumable way, right? It was maybe like a 1-to-5 likely or unlikely to roll over sort of way. Most people generally agree we're in the third iteration now of open data, and that's where we're releasing data in its raw formats, making it highly usable. And as I'll talk about a little bit more in a moment, we're at sort of a really interesting confluence of trends that make this notion of governments releasing data in raw but highly usable formats really valuable and really potentially interesting. So this is just my quick and dirty chronology of open data / civic hacking / government innovation. I talked about the Census Bureau. Who here has heard of GTFS data? Anyone? Google started something really powerful with the TriMet Transit Authority in Portland. They created this data standard called GTFS. At the time, it was the Google Transit Feed Specification. It has now been rebranded as the General Transit Feed Specification, I think. And what this was is Google coming in and saying, if you transit authorities will give us your data, and you give it to us in a very specific way, we'll put that data into Google, our search engine that everyone uses, and when people use it, we'll add information about transit options to search results. Really interesting, because it's data that the transit authorities had, and there was an immediate benefit for them to put it in this format. So the payoff for governments, it wasn't this abstract, down-the-road payoff. It was immediate. As soon as people started to search, and it had anything to do with travel or transportation, they could add the relevant information from the transit authority. Well, what ended up happening, as more and more transit authorities started to adopt this standard, this cottage industry has grown up around this data. And you can actually go to various places around the web and find hundreds, if not thousands, of different transit applications that have all been built by people that use transit systems, or they may be software companies that want to entice you to buy something. You name it, it runs the gamut. But this whole cottage industry has grown up around this data because there's a standard that applies across transit agencies. So if you can build it for one transit agency, you can make it work for another. As I mentioned before, the District of Columbia kicked off this contest called Apps for Democracy under their, at the time, their chief information officer, Vivek Kundra, who went on to some acclaim in the White House after that. This was a really interesting point in this whole process, because this was a municipal government saying, we're going to make our data available to outside users, and we're going to incentivize you to come and build something that's potentially valuable to us, in this case, by giving people cash prizes. And they also did this big event with the mayor at the time, and it was this really, really cool. This sort of new idea. It was quickly followed by similar kinds of app contests. Sunlight Labs held not one but two Apps for Democracy. New York City and Chicago have done these. These are municipally sponsored events. So the government is going to put up some cash or some other benefit to entice developers to actually build something. Following on this trend of municipally sponsored app contests, we saw the development of these, what are called civic hackathons. These are events where people would come together over a weekend. They were usually self-organized or community organized. They didn't operate under the sanction of the government. And people would build things that made their lives easier or their neighbors' lives easier, or even more broadly, you know, other folks in their city. So we've seen that trend grow and spread across the country and actually around the world. And what's really interesting, it's these external users that are driving the adoption of open data policies. People, there's this raging debate in the world of open data as to whether or not civic hackathons actually produce value, whether or not they actually produce valuable outcomes. And depending on the time of year or the person you're talking to, you can get a good or a bad review of these things. But it's my contention that it is these events, these kinds of events, these concrete manifestations of external desire for government data that have driven the adoption of formal open data policy. So if nothing else, if we get no apps out of these things at all, nothing useful, we've at least got governments actually formalizing policies that are the direct result of this external demand for open data. So why is open data important? The gentleman I mentioned who was in the District of Columbia when they sort of kicked off this whole app contest craze, Vivek Kundra, described it so succinctly and so perfectly that I use this quote everywhere. It's the democratization of data. It's taking data that governments collect and maintain and curate and making it available for anyone that wants it. It's certainly central to this idea of government transparency. Much of this data, the only place you can get it is from government. It is often collected at great expense and maintained at great expense by governments. Another interesting point, I mentioned this earlier, this confluence of trends. So we're seeing really, really powerful data tools go mainstream. It's never been as easy to use data or to build things with data as it is today. We have things now that people couldn't have imagined 5 years ago. So think about where we're going to be 5 years from now in terms of the riches of data tools that we'll have at our disposal. That completely changes the equation in terms of how governments manage data, because now everyone, literally everyone in this room, can log on through their web browser and have access to a spreadsheet program that is one of the most powerful spreadsheet programs the world has ever seen. And you can get that for free. So that completely changes the equation for how governments manage data and how they share it with people. This is driving the strong external demand for data. We're finding it very possible to build useful applications with data. I'm going to talk about a few of them from Philadelphia in a moment. Increasingly, we're moving beyond the initial early justifications for open data around government transparency and starting to talk about how open data can drive innovation. And even more interesting, how it can drive economic development. Is it possible to spur the growth of new software companies, new startups, if we give them data? Even more exciting, can we give them data that relates to a tough issue that we face as a city or a county or a state, and have them help us solve that problem through the creation of some new app? That's sort of the brass ring that everyone's looking for now. I believe very strongly that we're at a really interesting point. Almost as if you went back to maybe the early to mid-90s, when the internet really started to change the way governments did things. From that point forward, if you look at what happened, the internet has become an integral part of how governments provide service delivery. No question about it. It's intricately a part of that. And it always will be. So I believe we're at a point now where we're witnessing the integration of data and the relationships we build around that data with external users and how it changes, fundamentally changes the way we deliver services to citizens. We're at the very beginning of that trend, and I'm excited to see where we're going to go. But ultimately, data that is shared by the government with external users will be a key element in how governments do their most fundamental job, which is deliver service. So let's talk about open data in Philadelphia. This is a snapshot of our open data portal. We have an open data portal that was created actually in advance of the open data policy that was adopted in Philadelphia. This was created by the data community in Philadelphia. One didn't exist for Philly, so a bunch of people that really cared about this got together. They decided to create. At the time, there weren't really good options, either commercial or open source, for an open data directory or open data portal. So they built one, and then they open sourced it. And after that, other cities have used this same base software to do things. But this is one of the data releases that we released this last December. It's Part 1 crimes, which are the more serious crimes in Philadelphia. I like to talk about this example because it exemplifies what we've tried to do with our data releases. We released this data with great intent, and it's specifically engineered so that people will actually use it. We've developed application programming interfaces. Anybody ever heard of APIs? You may hear that term sort of bantied about. All that means is it's a software interface. It's an interface that you can create software against. And if you're a developer or you're someone who builds something, particularly web applications and the like, this is something that is really helpful if you're trying to build something quickly and cheaply. We also provide a static download of this data that you can use in any way you want in a simple comma-separated value format. It's updated every morning. I think it has approaching 700,000 records or something, which is great because it's a very complete data set, but it's kind of depressing in that we have that many serious crimes. But what this has resulted in is the creation of new applications and new views of this data that provide insight into how our city is working and where things are happening, and potentially what it allows both us as a government and other interested stakeholders in our community to do is to mash this data up with other information, socioeconomic data, temperature data, pollution data, educational attainment, all of these things. So what story can we begin to tell about how our city works and what leads to crime in certain areas? 311 service requests, what's the proximity of serious crime to vacant houses? All of these sorts of questions we can now start to explore collaboratively because we've made this data available to anyone that wants to use it. I should also point out that what we're doing in Philadelphia is unique. This data portal that I mentioned, it's at opendataphilly.org if you care to view it. It is not run by the city of Philadelphia. It is actually operated. This is sort of a part of our legacy that this was created before the city adopted a formal open data policy. But it's actually maintained by a nonprofit that was spun out of the Temple School of Journalism in Philadelphia. And right now, Philadelphia is the only large city in the country that doesn't unilaterally control its open data portal. So we can't tell the nonprofit that runs this, don't put that data source in because it makes our city look bad. They are representatives of the data community, and we very much try and treat data as a community asset. So this is a unique strategy for managing a data portal in Philadelphia, but I think we're going to see more cities and counties start to adopt this. There are some similar examples. Cincinnati just actually adopted an open data portal that uses our software and is it's not officially affiliated with the city, but it may be as that city starts to move down the road of adopting a formal open data policy. Open Data Colorado is another one that has data pulled in from multiple jurisdictions, and it's actually managed by a nonprofit in Colorado. So let's look at some examples of what happens when we release this data. This is something called Philly Tree Map. Excuse my cheesy animation here. I'll talk around it. But on the upper, on your upper left here is Philly Tree Map. Philly Tree Map is an application that actually lets you explore the urban forest. So you can actually go and find trees in Philadelphia, urban trees. You can find out what species they are. You can find out really interesting things like the water benefits, the greenhouse gas offsets, the energy benefits, the air quality benefits. The really interesting thing about Philly Tree Map is it actually comes with a set of instructions. So if you want to actually measure the tree, the circumference of the tree, or if you want to estimate the canopy coverage, it will let you do that so that you can then add that information back in and make it more current. which is a really interesting concept for managing information about the urban forest. On your upper right is an app called Baldwin. Baldwin is named for an old locomotive works in Philadelphia, and it actually uses real-time information from our transit authority. This is an app I use all the time. I use it on my commute every day to and from work. You tell it where you are and where you're going. It'll give you the next three departing trains. Green means it's on time. If it's anywhere between 0 and 10 minutes late, it turns yellow, and if it's after that, it turns red. Really simple. It was built within, I'd say, a week or two. It's maintained at almost no cost. And what's really interesting about this is that it's one of a community of applications for consuming transit data in Philadelphia that weren't built by the Transit Authority. So the role of the Transit Authority has fundamentally changed in terms of generating and producing and maintaining these externally facing applications. They actually did just release their own official SEPTA app, but they gained a lot of knowledge from the community that built their own apps, their own spin on this data. How do you use this data? How is it important to you? Do you want to know, do you want to mash it up with information about the bike network? Do you want to add in real-time information from the airport? So if you wanted to catch a train down to the airport, and which train should I get if my flight's at 4:30? But in a way, what we're seeing is transit authorities across the country actually get out of the business of building customer-facing apps. So it's a really new role for governments, because we've always thought of ourselves as the ones that build these end solutions. The things that you look at to get information from government have always been built by government, and increasingly that's not true anymore. This app here was built by, it was actually built by a fellow that works with me in the city of Philadelphia, but he did this in his spare time. He didn't tell anybody about it until it was done. It's an app that lets you visualize crime in the city. You can actually draw any sort of shape you want, and it will pull up all the crimes in the area. You can slide it left and right and look over time. You can filter by crime type. All three of these built with really lightweight technologies that are becoming the standard for building web applications. So this is another thing that's really interesting. I'm talking about overlapping trends here. The way that we build applications, the way that we write software, the way that we deploy software and maintain it, changes so rapidly. It's really impossible for government to keep up with that. Governments aren't built to move that quickly. And they're built that way on purpose, right? We have separation of powers. We have an executive and legislative branch. If we wanted to make it efficient, we wouldn't have built it that way. We have budget cycles that are annual. We have long procurement processes. All of these processes were built for a reason, but they don't match up really well with technology. And the problem is that the pace of change in technology keeps accelerating. It keeps accelerating. So this idea of sharing data externally and engaging other people to help us build things sort of gets us out of the business of making bets on technology, because we're not really good at that. We can instead become data stewards. We can actually change the way we cause these apps to come into being. So who's building these apps? This is just a random picture from a collection of thousands that I have of hackathons and data jams and hack nights that happen all over the city of Philadelphia and happen all over the country, in fact. This is just a bunch of people that came together. I think this one is at Temple University to work on open data and to build things. I think this was actually a journalism hackathon. I'd have to go back and look at what came out of it, but these kinds of things happen really regularly. A lot of these folks may be trying out new technologies for the first time, so they view an event like this as an opportunity to try something different. Maybe something I don't get to try at the office. Maybe there's an issue that affects them in particular, something in their neighborhood, a vacant house, a crime that occurred, a transit that just isn't close enough. All of these things, and they want to actually build something that helps them, helps their neighbors, and then ultimately helps their community. So it's a really powerful dynamic. It's happening a lot in the city. So what's the impact of all this? What impact is this having? And this is where you're free to challenge me. So nothing I say here is unchallengeable. So I hope we have a really good discussion about some of this after I get done moving my arms around. I can tell you, inside Philadelphia, it's creating an environment where we think about reusability of data, and that's something we didn't think about before. One of the biggest challenges we face in releasing open data in the city of Philadelphia is not culture is an issue, the culture inside government, but it isn't the biggest issue. The biggest issue is the legacy systems that we have, the things that house this information. Some of them are quite old by technology standards, 20, 25 years old. They weren't designed with the idea that we were going to someday release this data to the public. So as a result, there's a lot of things in that data that we don't want to release. Credit card numbers, social security numbers, the names of witnesses to crimes, these sorts of things we don't want to release. And if we're going to be good data stewards, we need to be very careful about the kind of information we're releasing. So one of the big challenges we face is that our systems, our older system especially, weren't designed with the idea that someday we would take this data and share it externally. As a result, it's not used in a way that's consistent with that. But we are starting to think more strategically about data. How can we use our data, our own data, more smartly? How can we use it to empower better decisions that are made by the city? How can we share it in between departments? You know, Philadelphia is not unlike any other city in the country in that we're very siloed. We have departments that don't communicate well with each other. We have one department that actually assesses the value of property in the city and grants exemptions against your assessed value. And we have a whole other department that actually applies the tax rates against that value and collects the property taxes from you. So if those two departments don't talk well, you can have all sorts of problems. But now that we're starting to think about shareability of our data, we're starting to think about how we might use it more strategically ourselves. And I'll have more to say on this in just a minute. My own experience has been that the most creative uses of data come from people who are not the direct stewards of it. They don't live with it every day. So as a result, they're not handicapped by preconceived notions about what it's meant to do and what it's supposed to be. That's why hackathons and data jams and hack nights are wonderful things, because they produce all sorts of ideas. They produce all sorts of ideas about what's possible with data. And very often, I see government officials that end up going to these events go, oh, I never thought of that. That's a really interesting idea. So the more you can get people that aren't close to your data exposed to it and to start thinking about creative uses, the better. Increasingly now, we realize that the investments we make in technology as a city, as a government, need to be made with the idea that we're going to take our data and we're going to share it externally. And we're going to share it internally. And we didn't really think about that before. So I want to kind of get at this internal versus external discussion, because when we think about open data, and normally when I talk about it, it's always this discussion of externally sharing data. So to making data open and sharing it externally. So not too long ago, there was an engineer at Google who was grousing about Google Plus, Google's new social network. And in this rant that he ended up accidentally making public, he didn't mean to make it public, but he did, he ended up talking about Amazon and the development of Amazon Web Services. Everyone heard of Amazon Web Services? Because Amazon used to be they just kind of sold you books, I guess. They actually power about 50% of the internet now through their web services. And it was this very detailed description of how that culture inside Amazon came to be. And the head of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, I think it's Jeff Bezos, right? He had this really interesting set of edicts for his employees. And it essentially boiled down to be open or be fired. He said, all of our operating units, all of our teams are going to communicate through data services. So that's how you have to communicate. No meetings, no memos, expose a data service, describe how it works, and then share that documentation with another team. That's how you're going to work together. He said, all of the interfaces, without exception, must be designed to someday be externalized. So we're going to build these things, we're going to eat our own dog food for a while, and then when it's good enough, we're going to open it up to the world, and we're going to charge money, and we're all going to get rich. No exceptions, he said. Be open or you will be fired. Have a good day. That was the end of his missive. So this idea that this organization would develop these data interfaces, so to speak, internally to foster internal communication and then turn them outward so that they could be used externally was really, really revolutionary and very valuable. What we see happening with open data in Philadelphia, and I think increasingly in other cities, is we see the reverse of this trend happening. So when we started to release our data externally, we had to go through a lot of steps. If you want people to really use your data, you can't just throw it out there, not tell anybody about it, not document it well, not listen to users and make it better as they uncover flaws or run into unexpected issues. So there's a whole process you have to go through to make it a really viable offering for external users. Through that whole process of going through that, what ended up happening was we started to hear from other operating units within the city of Philadelphia, other departments that said, hey, I didn't know we had that data available. Can I use it? And we would simply say, yes, you can. Here's the public documentation for that data. Go use it. So interestingly, the process of opening up our data to external users and going through that very rigid process of making it attractive for outside users has turned into an internal benefit. Let me give you one quick example. So in Philadelphia, we have a gas utility that's a municipally owned utility. I don't know for how much longer it will be, but it is still. When they actually get a new account, they need to verify the address, and they'll do that with data from the city, usually from our Office of Property Assessment. They used to get this data on a CD. They would pay $100 once a year, and they get an updated CD of all the property information. You can immediately see the drawbacks with that approach, right? We're just finishing up work on a data service that they'll be able to use, so they can pull this information in real time through an API, actually. In the course of talking to them about data that we had to offer from the city proper, they said to us, would you be interested, you know, because we have account information where the name on the account changes every 6 months, every 8 months, every 12 months, indicating a probable renter that's putting the gas account in their name. We said, yeah, we would be interested in that because our Department of Licenses and Inspections actually issues a rental license, and we want to make sure those folks have their proper rental license. So there's a possible revenue benefit for the city there. More interestingly, if you're a renter or if you're a landlord and you rent your property in the city of Philadelphia and your tenant doesn't pay their gas bill, the gas utility can come in and put a lien on your property. Unless you're in their landlord, I don't know what they call it, landlord protection program, I guess it's called. And the only way you can get into that program is if you have a valid rental license from the city of Philadelphia. So you see this really nice interlocking synergy start to take place through this interchange of data between really two different entities within government. So I like to think of it as sort of the reverse of what happened at Amazon, where they built internally and then turned it outward. We've started by turning things outward, and now we're slowly turning them inward and figuring out how we can use our own data more strategically. And it's just sort of interesting that to get to those internal conversations around better data use, we had to go outside. We had to actually offer our data up externally. So what is the future of open data? And this is really where you can challenge me. So if you think I'm full of it, let's dig in after these next couple slides. There was a really, really interesting report from the Center for Technology and Government last year that they didn't, for me, sort of captured this change in identity that we're going through in government. And they basically said that governments need to start thinking about themselves differently. They need to start thinking of themselves as stewards of data. Now, most people inside government, particularly people in government IT, self-identify as solution providers. We build the things that you use to pay your taxes, to find out about your property, to find out where the crime is, to find out when the next train's coming. These are all things that governments did on their own. That was the first generation of, I guess e-gov, or online service delivery. It was governments building things that sat on the internet that you used a web browser to do. And now that's changing, because we're not the ones building everything. We build some of the things, and some of the things we don't build, but we hopefully provide the basic building blocks for all of those things. And if we're going to do that well, we need to think of ourselves as data stewards. We're not the owners of data. We don't own the data. It's not ours to control. It is everyone's. It's a community asset. So it really requires a different way of thinking about data. And most data stewards inside government, I'll be quite candid with you, don't think this way because they haven't had to think this way for their entire professional career. So when you get into a conversation about data that someone has poured a lot of energy and a lot of time and commitment into, it can be a bit of a touchy conversation around data stewardship and data ownership and things like that. Part of my job is technology. The other part is psychology. So there's a lot of that involved in some of the discussions that we have. So looking even further down the road, we raise our gaze a bit and try and stare far, far down the road. What do we see happening? So has anybody here ever heard of GitHub? Anyone know what GitHub is? Okay. So GitHub is a platform for software collaboration. It's built around an open source tool called Git, which is actually not new. It's quite old by technology standards. But it adds a whole bunch of social and collaborative features to this, essentially this software versioning system. We are turning to this platform increasingly, not just to release software that we want to make open source, but because of some of the things that GitHub is now allowing us to do with data, we're increasingly using it as a platform for our data. So GitHub has these notions of forking software code. That's typically how software gets developed using this paradigm. If we apply it to government data, we can think of somebody creating a fork of our official data set and actually using it in another thing, using it in an application they want to build for whatever reason that might be. This idea of branching, so most often in software development you have this idea of different branches that may be created to fix a bug or to add a new feature. It's very common in software parlance. When we think about it in terms of data, this gets really exciting because what it means is that someone can create a branch of our official data and maybe add something to it and then offer it back to us to merge into our official city data set. So right now on opendataphilly.org, we've got this really expansive data set of every property that is owned by the City of Philadelphia, whether it's owned, leased, you name it, everything from tennis courts to big buildings to utility sheds, you name it. I've actually had a conversation with someone who may want to take that data and create a branch of it and add in information about handicapped accessibility to each one of those data points and then offer that back to the city as something they can merge into our official data set. So it's moving beyond even this idea of governments becoming stewards of data and moving us toward this idea that we will be collaborators, that the data itself is something that the community will help us build and enrich and maintain and make better for other people to use. So this is our GitHub account in the City of Philadelphia. It's github.com/City of Philadelphia. I'm going to go ahead and say this unboastfully. Philadelphia has more public repositories in its GitHub account than any city in the country. New York had like very anemic 8 or 9. Chicago had like 16, where we've got a very robust 23, you'll notice. I said that in New York last night. I was there talking. It didn't go over very well. Some of these things are actually applications. So the ABI, this is an actual application you can use to look at the change in your property taxes under our new actual value initiative, which is a reassessment initiative in Philadelphia. My Philly Rising is another mobile app that we use in our Philly Rising initiative. But polling locations, flu shot locations, airport data, this is all data that we are now offering up to people to branch and to fork and to use in different ways. So what we hope people will do, not just with our applications, we hope they'll do it with our applications. We hope they'll take the software, add something nice, fix something that's broken, and offer it back to us to build this really nice dynamic of collaborative development. We hope that sometime people will take our data and do the same thing. Take our data, enrich it somehow, add some feature to it. Even if we don't merge it back into the official city branch, it's still there. It's still there for someone else to use. So it really builds up the universe of data, and it really increases the value of these data because we don't have to be the only ones that actually maintain this data and keep it current and keep it as rich as it can be. One of the repositories in here is geospatial data that we're now offering on GitHub. GitHub has actually built a lot of really interesting features into their platform to support, especially geospatial data. So what we decided to do is we decided to seed it with some really, what we hoped were interesting data sets like the location of bicycle thefts, all the city buildings that I mentioned earlier, where are the farmers markets, the outline of police districts, location of school facilities, and our street center lines. What we've asked people to do is actually go and find a data set that exists somewhere for the City of Philadelphia, which you can go to PASDA, the state's geospatial repository. You can go there and get shapefiles that are relevant to the City of Philadelphia. Turn them into open data and put them on here. If you do that, we will merge it. We will make it an official part of our open data offering. Increasingly, we're using this platform that was meant to drive collaboration in software development to drive collaboration in data development. So I think that's where we're headed. No one has yet called me crazy. I've seen some raised eyebrows, but you're all free to challenge me on that point afterwards. One of the other things we're doing with GitHub as a platform, it's becoming increasingly important for governments. We're actually using it to help experiment with our procurement system. There's a connection here between how we use open data to foster the outside development of things that used to be built by government and how we do it more traditionally, which is we issue an RFP and we pick a firm to build us something. We actually ran through a pilot earlier this year where we used this collaborative platform in its entirety for the entire process. And what was really interesting about it is we got bids on work through this platform that's meant to be a software repository. So we were able to use the actual features of this platform by creating a bug or creating a question and giving it back to the vendor to tell us, hey, you didn't give us any contact information. That's a question we have for you. Hey, you didn't give us a cost proposal. That's a bug. That's a bug in your RFP. If anyone cares, I've actually written extensively about it. I'll provide that URL if you really want to know the gory details. But increasingly, the work we're doing around open data is driving a larger conversation around technology procurement, which no one's talking about right now. That was a joke. Everyone's talking about it. And how we acquire technology solutions as governments. It's something we don't do well. And I don't know that we fully appreciate why we don't do it well. We don't operate at the same speed that the world of technology operates at. And we operate at the speed we operate at for a reason. The budget cycle is what it is. The procurement cycle has values imbued in it that we consider to be good ones, like risk aversion and openness and transparency. But they don't always work well with the way that technology evolves and the way that changes happen and how we build things. So we've got to find different ways to do this. We've got to find ways that we can either encourage or collaborate or partner to build the solutions that we need as governments. Because the old processes aren't working, and they're actually getting worse because the speed at which technology is changing is accelerating. So those deficiencies get magnified. Okay, so that's my story. I guess we can do questions or discussion.
Do you have some examples of GitHub for procurement and how
this is the only one. We put a proposal out on GitHub, and we said instead of sending us a PDF document, which is a printed response to our RFP, which is normally what you see in government, we said we want you to create an actual software repository, and we want you to treat it as if it were software. And some people kind of did that. What they did was they took their normal RFP response and they turned it into a PDF document, and they just gave it to us that way, and it made us really sad, because that wasn't what we wanted. We actually had some people that responded. So think about this. We put an RFP out, and people responded with prototype software code. They said, here's kind of what we think you're looking for. Here's how you can download it, install it, and kick the tires a little bit. We actually had one respondent, the one that actually ended up winning this bid. They created a website that is housed on GitHub, and it had this really, really compelling narrative of user stories and who was going to use this app and why it was important. And they really did their homework. So think about it. They responded to an official government solicitation with a website, an open source website. I thought that was incredibly brave because they had no idea what we were going to say. We could have said, this is not regulation B75. You're supposed to give it to us this way. But we wanted to encourage some risk taking. So we're sharing the story in the hopes that it will get others to experiment. Procurement's a really tough one because in Philly, and I'm sure it's the same here in Pittsburgh, city charter and city statute govern procurement, and those are things that don't change unless you have a majority of 17 city councilors on board with what you want. So we've got to find wiggle room in the process to experiment and to figure out, to tease out what works well, and hopefully share that with other cities and other governments and do it that way.
Open it up for questions. Go ahead.
Okay. Do you have a recommended licensing for open data? Because I imagine there's some data sets out there that can make people a lot of money. I don't know if you're releasing under a non-commercial license or anything.
We don't release it under a non-commercial license. By and large, the licensing and the terms of use that we have for our data are the legacy terms that they've always been released with. We started a conversation with our law department about standardizing that language across departments and thinking about it in terms of how it will actually be used. It's an ongoing conversation. I don't know that they necessarily understand that. I think part of it is bridging the understanding gap between people that are in the legal end of it and people that are in the technology end of it. So I don't know that they fully understand how the data is going to be used. To give you an example, most of the terms of use that we have written for our data apply to static downloads. So you download a copy of the data and you do what you want with it. When we expose information through an API or a programming interface, it behaves differently, right? That's a shared resource. That means anyone can use the same endpoint you're using. So if I use it irresponsibly, I could diminish the value of that thing for you. And that was not reflected in our terms of use. We've tried to emulate what some of the federal agencies have done with their API offerings. But it's very much still a work in progress. It's very much still an ongoing dialogue with our legal departments so that we fully understand how we want to use it and what the implications of the specific restrictions are that we put on our data. Yes?
So one of the drivers for open data is to be open, measured, and accountable. Are you applying that to yourself? Which is, did you measure the cost of OpenData for Geofabrica and the benefit as well?
It's an interesting question. The short answer is no. Let me be more clear. So there's this really interesting dialogue going on right now about the kinds of data that get opened. There's a growing contingent that want to see data released that will foster, as I mentioned before, innovation, economic development. So this idea that we can create businesses around open data, especially smart, small, agile, is really enticing. Resonates really, really well with elected officials.
Is it real?
We don't know. We don't know yet. There's another group within the open data community that believes very strongly, the purists believe that we started out with this idea that data was about transparency. It was about citizens' ability to hold their government accountable and to evaluate the quality of the work that they were doing. I don't think those two are mutually exclusive, but I do think a balance has to be struck between them, and there's a debate going on right now as to where that balance gets struck. And it's important, you know, you mentioned the cost of open data. It isn't free to do this. I mean, most of the cost is actually in staff time, and we don't do a good job of measuring that, but we know there's an opportunity cost to it. So we know that by releasing one data set, we're not going to be able to release another data set. So what informs our decision around which data sets to release? Just to give you a quick example, the crime data set I mentioned earlier, even though we had a very willing partner in our police department, they have this data. They're a department that gets the power of data. Most police departments do, because they use data to inform like dispatching and resource allocation and things like that. But the data itself had a lot of information we didn't want to release. So we had what I thought was a really good discussion. It took time. It took energy around how specific should we be when we put a point on a map. Do I want to put a map a point on someone's house and say a crime has occurred there? Is that too much information? How much information do we want to release in an address? Should it be your specific address, or should we obscure that information somehow? We have to, if it's serious crimes, we have to ask the question about sexual related crimes. How much information should we release? Where does the public's right and interest in knowing where and what type of crimes occur get struck between a person's right to not be victimized again? So we had this really healthy discussion, I thought, internally. We don't put a point on a parcel. We put it along the street center line. We don't give a full address. We round it to the 100 block. And we give out even less information about sexual crimes. And that's been subject to debate. We've had people say to us, you're not giving us enough information. We want more specificity. But I think that's part of the dynamic around it. So a really long answer to your question, I apologize. We don't know to the dollar what it costs to release each data set, because much of it is hard to measure. It's staff time, things like that. We know that there's an opportunity cost. We know that by releasing some data, we're not going to be able to release others. So we have to be smart in what we release. And in terms of the actual benefits, I would argue that I don't know what units we're going to measure transparency. What's the unit of transparency that we measure? I don't know what that is, but a good discussion to have. Good hard questions. Let's go to the back. Yes?
How this open data is increasingly being used by community members and nonprofits groups that are able to use this data in the community process to set priorities or inform their advocacy, as well as in a way to kind of another check on governance. In New York City, they use some of the open data, like information on sanitation or the assessment of cleanliness of the neighborhood. The communities have gone back and kind of tried to validate that and say, sorry, Mr. Mayor, we don't agree with you on this data. And so it's created an opportunity for discussion about what kind of data communities need and how they can be involved in data quality. And so that's one of the, maybe if you could talk about the way that developers and people in government can or try to work to build that into the process.
Yeah, I think that I was in a meeting or an event not long ago with the company that developed Philly tree map. And the thing that they said was interesting, when you look at the urban forest in Philadelphia, you see inequity. You see inequity, neighborhoods that are rich in trees, and you see neighborhoods that aren't. I think you see that same disparity when you look at things like crime, obviously. 311 service requests is a really interesting one, because it's one of those data sets that actually, and we do make some of our 311 data open, not all of it. Many cities do make some available. I believe Chicago is the only one that makes every kind of request open and publicly inspectable. But what gets interesting is you can look at that service request, you can see where they're occurring, and you can see how long they take to close. So there you've got a really, really effective measure of government performance there across neighborhoods. So we can start to ask ourselves questions, right? Sometimes these are tough questions and uncomfortable questions, because we can lay over, you know, socioeconomic status, we can overlay ethnicity. How are they related? Are they related? How do we do in Philadelphia versus City of Pittsburgh or Baltimore or Boston? How fast do we close graffiti in neighborhoods that have median incomes below, I don't know, $25,000? These are all questions we can start to put out there. We see a lot of community groups that want this data to start to ask these questions. The one that I think has the most resonance in Philadelphia now is vacant property ownership. Who owns that? Where do they live? Do they live? Are they a resident of Philadelphia or not? Do they owe taxes? Are there violations on that property? So these are all questions that can now be asked, and to a large extent answered now. And I think if we look at open data that way, it's very empowering for neighbors. They may not be real happy with with some of the answers, but these are the questions that we need to empower people to start asking. Getting back to this notion of transparency, part of what this has to be is this has to be a way for people to evaluate the job that government's doing, and that has to happen because the tools to do that are available now. You can throw this all in a spreadsheet and calculate some value that tells you good or bad. So, did that answer your question? Yes, sir.
I actually wanted to sort of follow on with this question, because I think you're sort of your last statement there assumes that there's a technological know-how on everybody's part to use the data. And so I wonder what you feel like your role is in providing training or assistance in bridging that technological gap, so that community groups or individuals who might not have the ability to query the data
That's a great question. I think it's worth noting. So I drew a parallel in this discussion about, you know, where we were when the internet became important to what governments do, and now where we are with data becoming important with what we do. We're still dealing with this old issue of access. It never really went away. The dimensions of it changed. Who has access to the internet? Who doesn't? How does that affect what we do as governments in using the internet to deliver services and information? Same basic issue, different manifestation of it. But so it's in a way it's a little bit depressing, because we haven't gotten past the same issue, but it isn't a new issue. So most people that consume open data will do so. They will not look at this, right? They won't look at the data in here. They'll consume it through some sort of finished application, or infographic, or newspaper article, whatever the case may be. There'll be something that takes this data and extracts some information and presents it to them. I think that the thing we have to do is twofold. We need to make sure that the data that we're actually putting out there and investing time in is the data that people want in their communities. They want to understand what's happening in their communities, and we've got to foster relationships with people that can help to build these finished applications that will end up displaying it in a useful way to people. And sometimes we don't do a good enough job in terms of releasing the data that's the right data, either because it's in a really crummy format, it's in an old system, whatever the case may be, and sometimes we don't do a good enough job in the outreach to you're a group that cares about quality of life in, you know, northeastern Philadelphia.
I need to be a little bit critical, but I will.
Please.
If I think it's striking that bicycle thefts in farmers markets are through the data sets, the interest of the future here, it seems really biased towards a certain community. potential users who are interested, but also there's probably a lot of the same people who have the ability to pull the data.
Yeah, that's a fair argument. I will say that the farmer's market information actually has in it data on whether or not they accept SNAP benefits, and it's actually been used to provide, to build apps that actually help people find fresh, locally grown food if they're going to spend their benefits on it. Mostly what you see represented here is the stuff that was low-hanging fruit. This is the stuff that was a shade or two away from being ready to be used externally. And some of the stuff that we have isn't as close to being ready, and it requires work for us to go through and figure out, is it ready to be released? Is it documented thoroughly? Do we understand the proper terms in use? Do we understand how people are going to use it? So it's a fair criticism. I think what you see here is low-hanging fruit, to be honest with you. Yes, ma'am. I guess I'm not understanding the question. The open data fosters innovation. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. When the ingredients are right, and you know, big data to me, big data has become a word that or a term that we just kind of throw around. So to me, big data is less about the size of the data, and it's more about the quality of the insights we can draw from that data. We see this happening a lot. It is hard to quantify. What's the quality of a new way of looking at an old problem? We do see interesting things start to develop when, so in some sense, the data gets richer if it's put next to the right, the other kinds of data that complement it well. We actually do a really good array of property data in the city of Philadelphia that's available. And we've seen several independent efforts crop up around reuse of vacant property. One of them, in fact, I was not aware of. They don't come and ask the city, can we use your data for this? They have our data. We make it available. They happen to be people that know how to use it, so they create services. One of them is a mapping application. You can locate vacant land in your neighborhood, and using all the data that the city has provided, try and find out more about that property. Who owns it? Is it up for sale? Can I convert it into a community garden? How do I contact the owner? What council district is it in? All of this data that we already make available that someone has assembled and made more powerful by combining it and provided a service that will actually benefit the city of Philadelphia. We see that happening organically in some really key areas. That happens to be an issue that's particularly acute in Philadelphia, so we see several different efforts moving around vacant property and how do we reuse vacant property, how do we identify who owns it and hold them accountable. I really do think it's the combination of the right issue and the availability of data, and we don't always get those coming together. It's really nice when we do, because we see these organic sort of things popping up that are really interesting and really valuable, and things that we wouldn't have thought of ourselves or had the time to do ourselves. Yes, sir.
The challenge that we have in standardizing legacy data sets. Is there anything that's been happening in Philadelphia that shines a light on a successful process for that, or perhaps have you been involved with ETL, extract, transform, load systems? Because that's certainly something we'll face in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I think to some extent it's a unique issue for every city, because the systems that you have and how you use them currently is unique to you. There are external efforts to standardize data. It's a little different. The issue is a little different. So the internal issue is, how do I make my data? How do I vet my data appropriately, so that it is A, useful to people that want to use it, and B, I'm not giving up information that I shouldn't be giving up. So that's an internal process. External to that, there are a number of efforts underway to create standards for data, much like the GTFS standard I talked about earlier, that would allow. Data from the city of Pittsburgh to be commingled with data from Philadelphia or New York or Chicago. We see this happening around. Does Pittsburgh have 311? Do you have a 311 311 data is a big one because a lot of cities have that. In Philadelphia, we spearheaded an effort to standardize data on the location where you can get your flu shot, mainly based on the experience of last year's flu season. San Francisco's worked on restaurant inspection data, standardizing that data, and I believe housing inspection data as well. So I don't know if that answers your question. I think you were more asking about the internal
data sets that you just won't be able to change. There are consultants and Oracle has a program, for example, that will scrape the data out and prepare it for open delivery.
Yeah. But in what? What fields? What do they look like? What are they? What units are they in?
Right. I mean, how do we get the data from closed systems after we've been allowed to get it into the open data portal? That's the essential challenge. I know that there are entire software systems devoted to extract, transform, load process. And
there's a lot of good options for that. We have a lot of legacy data that sits in a mainframe in the same building I'm in. I've seen it once, the only one time I've ever seen this contraption. We have probably 4 to 5 different techniques for getting, depending on the data set, for getting the data out of this old mainframe system and into something that we can then share. And so there are a lot of options, is I guess what I meant. There's a lot of things you can do to take data from an old system and condition it for release externally. I think the biggest challenge is, what does it look like? What are the fields that I'm going to extract from this legacy system? What checks do I need to apply to that field to make sure that there isn't a credit card number in there, or a social security number, or a name if I don't want a name? I think one advantage is that a city like Pittsburgh could look to other cities and see what data have you released. I do think that one of the reasons you do see a lot of this data here that seems to be low-hanging fruit is because we know that there's no sensitive data in farmers markets, right? At least we don't think there are. So I think the bigger challenge with taking data from old systems is figuring out what it's supposed to look like before you share it. What fields are in there? What do they mean? Do they have any relationship to data that other cities or governments have released? In some respects, that's a unique process because the systems you have that house your data are what they are for you, and they may not be that for someone else. I wish there was an easier formula for that. Maybe we'll get that at some point to work on that front.
Mark, we're in the same state. It doesn't seem like it sometimes, but we have governor's race coming up. What kind of things have you thought about doing to put this open data issue on the statewide agenda?
I haven't thought anything about that. I've done no thinking about the statewide election. It's interesting. We see cities doing a lot of this work. There are less examples of states doing it, I think. And the states that are doing it, I think, have data that may seem less relevant. I think it's happening in cities. I think cities are in the vanguard on this. Number one, because I think cities provide, there's a more intimate relationship based on the kinds of services we provide. I also think that cities are in a unique position in the sense that, this city and my city, we can't even pick our own revenue mix, right? You've got to go to Harrisburg and ask if you can ask for permission to get a new revenue source or to change an existing one. Cities can't carry deficits over year to year, right? We've got to balance our budgets every year. So we're really constrained in ways that the federal and state governments are not. And I think since that is the case, and since we're sort of where the rubber hits the road in terms of service delivery, you see governments at the municipal level being much more open to this because we need to do more with less, so we have to try new things. We're much more open to things that haven't been done before. So I will look for a state that is doing some really, really interesting things with this. There are a few. New York State is doing some really cool stuff. And mainly by partnering with local governments, interestingly enough. But I have not thought about how it plays out statewide here in Pennsylvania.
Just a quick comment, Mark. In Maryland, it's pretty good. And one thing is, on the vacancy bubble we had earlier this year, our colleague Dave Bartel from Temple, they frequent Groundbag seminar folks, so they know some of the things that have been going on in Philadelphia from Temple's work today, too.
Oh, cool.
Mark, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, you talked about how GitHub makes it easy to branch and lets other folks contribute and then potentially merge. Have you actually done much merging, and what issues have you run into or what do you foresee?
We have not, and neither has the other city that is doing this, Chicago. We haven't been doing it for very long, and no one has taken us up on that offer yet.
What do you think you're going to encounter? Are there thorny issues you expect?
We're not there yet. The thorny issues I expect are, I think it's a bit of a stretch right now for governments to change the way they think, and put on their. I'm a data steward now. That's my job now. We're getting there. I think most government professionals can kind of see the writing on the wall in that respect. Where I think there's a bit more work to be done is for them to think of themselves as data collaborators. There aren't a lot of people within the city of Philadelphia that understand GitHub and how it works, and I'm sure that's the case here. And I'm sure it's the case in most governments. And I don't think we do a good enough job, to be honest with you, of communicating, especially internally, about why this is important and what this means and the empowerment that comes along with this. In fact, I can be candid with you and tell you we've done a lousy job at it. We need to do a much better job. To get government professionals to see their roles as data collaborators. Chicago actually put some geospatial data on GitHub before we did, and they also put it on OpenStreetMap, I think, which allows people to actually add in information. So there may have been some outside value added to some of Chicago's data that way. I need to check with them, but we have not had anyone. I've had discussions with people, but nothing concrete yet. So I'm anxiously awaiting that first opportunity. Yes?
The government and the county government wants to utilize open data. You mentioned the problem of being too entrenched in the data to really analyze it and make it good with the loop of that. Do you foresee government then outsourcing the process of analyzing and releasing this data, or do you see them hiring a company or people specifically working internally?
No, I don't see governments outsourcing this. So I think The kinds of data that governments probably should release first are the kinds of data they know people want. This gets back to this point of opportunity cost, especially if it's data that has already gone through maybe a right-to-know review. So we know it's public. We've released it before. Let's put it someplace so that it's usable so that people can go and get it instead of asking for it through this convoluted process. We know what people want, especially if we're starting at the beginning, right? We know they want transit data. We know they want crime data. We know they want property data. Very often they're asking us multiple times for the same data. If we're going to be transparent, if we're going to achieve this idea of transparency, we've got to be transparent around what we're spending our money on, who we're spending it with, and for what. These are all things that we know that we need to do, and that we are actually working to release now. But I hope we don't outsource that. I hope that's not something that governments decide to go outside and say what should be released. Because I think because one of the things I didn't touch on directly, but I sort of alluded to it, is this idea of engagement around data. So I often, when I talk to departments that are just about to do a data release, they're really happy because they're almost done. Right, they're just about to release their data, and then I spring it on them and I say, it's actually not the end, it's the beginning of the process now. You have to engage people, and you have to listen to people that use your data, and you have to be open to the fact that they may criticize it and say it's lousy, and they don't like it, and they want more details, all of which they do. So I think instead of going outside and trying to have some expert come in and tell them what they should release, they need to listen. Just listen to what people are asking for. And align what you want to do, if it's around transparency or more efficiency, whatever it is, whatever that value is you want to achieve, how do you align that with the data that you have publicly available? If it's transparency, where's your budget data? If it's efficiency, where is your time to complete 311 requests? I guess it all depends. But I don't think governments need help doing that. I think governments need to listen to what people are asking for. Yes, sir.
Where, from an infrastructure, a systems level, where are you putting this data? Are you making it available for people to use by APIs, or put it in some shared infrastructure? Where are you actually putting the data?
We're doing it in a couple of different places. So as I mentioned before, Open Data Philly is our sort of, This is sort of our phone book for data, right? This is where we list everything. But where it actually resides is in many different places. So we have a subset of this data that's available for developers. So this is a smaller set of what's in the larger Open Data Philly. Open Data Philly is everything. This is something we put together specifically for developers. We wanted to position ourselves in the same way that software companies do when they want you to come and use their data. You have to have certain things. You have to have APIs, because that's what developers want. You have to have documentation. People have to be able to understand what your data is, what it means, how it works. You have to be able to show them what other people have done with your data. You have to tell them the terms that it can be used under. You have to give them a place where they can go and they can discuss their use of it. All of these things private companies do already. They do it really, really well. We need to do that as a government. This is actually our open data portal, or our open data discussion group. We have a public discussion group where anyone can ask questions about our data. We encourage this because we want people to learn from other people's questions. And hopefully we don't have to answer the same question 5 or 6 times. But by and large, this is the place we're putting it. We have a central location where we list everything. And most governments that have any sort of an open data program will have something like this. They'll have this or something quite like it where you can search for data. That will come up with anything. Yeah, so you can see these are all the everything in here dealing with property. This is actually a data set that was released as part of our citywide reassessment. This was actually used in the methodology for doing assessed values. Every city that's doing something, every state, the federal government has data.gov. Data.gov is the federal data repository. This is where they list all of their data. So this is sort of the rallying point for open data. In whatever community you're in. The feds actually do list local governments in here, cities and counties as well. But that's where it is, if that answers your question.
Physically, is it still in Philly systems?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It's out in the cloud. Okay. It's on the interwebs somewhere. Yes?
Two-part question. The first is, so over the course of the past year, I've actually been dealing with the local MPO, the SPC, and a bunch of the counties in the region. And the people who have this data and steward it are, you know, more than willing to give it away and give me tons of data, but nowhere do they list, you know, what they have. They don't put it up. Like, most of what I'm looking for is geospatial data. Like, no one submits this stuff to PASTA. Like, I feel like an idiot just being like, why don't you just put this in an FTP directory? Why don't you submit this to PASTA? Like, look, what's a good way to start a conversation with people about this? And the second part of that conversation, the second part of my question was, so within a city, like within Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, how do you get people to agree on licenses for their data or IDs on things? Like, you know, the Parks Commission's calling this, you know, that, but then, you know, the land use people happen to be calling it that, like,
yep,
getting people to agree on calling things the same thing.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, what can you do in terms of, you know, if people don't submit their geospatial data to PASTA? Open Data Philly was actually created by outside of city government. And this was a bunch of people that were using data. They were aware of where it was. A lot of it was on PASTA, but not all of it. So this was created externally. And this really helped lay the groundwork for a more formal approach to this in Philadelphia, because we had a place now where you could list data. And if you have that, it's very empowering, because you can go to these data stewards, these data owners, and say, you need to list your data here. Now, you kind of can do that with PASDA. But for me, PASDA always feels sort of, you know, it's really just geospatial data. It's in shapefile format, which sometimes people don't want. This can be anything. It can be anything. So if you have a rallying point where you can say, list your data here, and if you get buy-in from your community, it can be very empowering. You tell those data owners, list your data here. This is where it needs to go. The second point is a really good one, and I mentioned it earlier in the talk when I said we're starting, because all this data is visible now, people can see it, warts and all, we can start to have a better discussion about our strategic use of data, right? So we can start referring to property IDs in the same way. I've always found really odd about Philadelphia, we have this property identifier called BRT number. BRT is the Board of Revision of Taxes. It no longer exists. It's now the Office of Property Assessment. I think that was the lineage there. But it's still referred to many times internally and externally
in these data sets. Let's see if it's in the... Yeah, there you go. Real estate tax lookup.
So we have a BRT number hit in our very, very simple search engine on this thing. It's not consistently referred to that way. It could be parcel ID. It could be OPA number. I think adding visibility is a really good way to foster a discussion on that. Because if you can't see it, it's less of an issue. But if everybody can see it, we gotta fix that. We really gotta make that more consistent. So I mean, that right there is an immediate payoff of visibility of your data.
Let's take one more question.
I'm interested in how this is financed. Is this the operating budget or?
This the city does not pay for.
So there will be any external foundation?
Yes. William Penn Foundation actually funded this.
How about your salary?
My salary is available publicly and...
No, who funded this? The city, right?
I'm sorry, I'm paid... Yes, I'm a city employee. But... I just wanted to add one point on this. So the site itself was actually funded by the William Penn Foundation. The nonprofit that runs it was funded by a grant from the William Penn Foundation. Not long ago, this is a really interesting project that was run. I actually was part of this before I worked for the City of Philadelphia, called the Open Data Race. And what it was funded by a grant from down at the bottom. No, sorry. It was. I'll show you the grant providers, but. We were able to collect some financial support from foundations and actually put a call out to nonprofits and said, tell us what you want. Tell us what data you would like to actually further your mission as a nonprofit. And they took nominations for a period of several weeks. And then what they did was they opened it up to voting. They said, you, nonprofit, go out to your constituency and have them vote. And we're going to find the ones that have the highest votes. And then we're going to, if they do actually fall under the purview of the City of Philadelphia, then we'll go to the city and say, see, people really do want this data, as evidenced by the number of votes on this contest here. This was done, I want to say, almost 2.5 years ago. And what's really interesting is that we've targeted a lot of our data releases around this. So going down this list here, reported bicycle thefts is now public, vacant land data is public, vacant land, you'll see that come up a lot here. Residential unsafe building citations is now public. We don't have demographic information for shelter services, vacant property information, parcels identified as vacant land. We don't have business privilege tax information, construction permits is, bike rack locations is. We don't have school BMI data. Homes and sheriff sale status is in the pipeline. That's actually going to come out soon. Restaurant and food inspection data is not. We have very odd restaurant inspection data, food inspection data here in Pennsylvania. I'm not really sure why. Code enforcement, stormwater billing data, election results, campaign finance records, polling place information, a lot of this information that came out of this effort, which was funded by nonprofits in the City of Philadelphia, has informed what we've been trying to do. So there is some foundation money in this, but this, we're unique in the sense that the City of Philadelphia does not operate this. This is operated by a nonprofit that is foundation funded. We're unique in that way. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it seems they should be contributing, and I was interested in the community process.
Well, we've got one more thing, but let's thank Mark for it. Bob, got a couple Pittsburghese things for you.
Yeah, we did bring you some gifts. So.
Nice.
So we have a nice shirt with all the neighborhoods and neighborhood names.
Oh, cool.
So.
Very cool.
And then... Now, this isn't your size, so maybe one of the kids can handle this, but this is the last available T-shirt from last year's Code Fest. We'll send you one from this year.
Oh, cool.
Steel City Code Fest. And it comes with a cape, too, so.
Definitely for one of my boys.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible towel.
Terrible towel cape.
There you go. Nice.
Oh, that's all stuck together.
Thanks.
Thanks.